G'day, welcome along to the Pastor's Heart. It's great that you could join us this afternoon. Today, we're talking about the difficult and sensitive topic of divorce, how we as pastors can better love those, both in our churches and in the wider community around us, who are going through the trauma of a marriage breakdown. I'm joined this afternoon by Melinda Hunt and Michael Sheedy. It's great to have you with us. Melinda and Michael are members of our church, Village Church, here in Annandale in Sydney, and they've been leading our divorce care ministry for 8 years. We worked out just before that you'd had probably 100 people.
Probably over that now.
Yeah. Through your lounge room in this time. And it's been extraordinarily helpful and effective, the ministry that's gone on here. Now, let's start, though, with the pastor's heart and your own heart. And maybe, Michael, we could start with you. And how did God do a work in you through your own divorce?
Well, it was never, Dominic, my plan that I was going to have a separation and divorce. That was never the plan for me. You know, to me, marriage is a lifelong commitment to God and your person that you're marrying. But it didn't turn out that way. And just in the haze and the shock and the grief of the moment, really all I could rely upon and fall back on was God's word, just by faith. And, you know, I thought particularly of Romans 8:28 at the time, that God works for the good of those who love him. There was no evidence. I couldn't see that at the time, but I just knew that God was faithful and that his word is true. And in the value of hindsight, a number of years later, you can see how that's the truth of God's word has come through. And, you know, in terms of being able to meet Melinda, to make a new start, and then to also, with Melinda at Village, have a ministry where we could reach out to people who we at Village might not have otherwise been able to reach out to, but through this ministry, been able to bring God's comfort and hope to them. And so that was something that was been very much in my heart, a heart of thankfulness, I think, that that's been able to happen with Melinda.
What about you, Melinda? I remember the time, our first conversation about your marriage breakdown. But tell us the journey that God has done in you and your life. Yeah,
I think certainly you never anticipate sort of how a marriage will progress, and it is, as Mike said, it's a great shock, you know, to suddenly find yourself on your own with your kids some of the time. And I think looking back now, what I can say is that and it's an odd thing to say, but I'm actually extremely grateful. I think I was, in a way, broken apart and put back together into something that was new and stronger and closer to God, a better wife, and really, as Mike said, just really well-placed to be able to minister to people who are suffering through separation and divorce. So I actually feel gratitude.
Now, we're going to have a range of different people listening to us, watching us at this point. I'm thinking of some people who are watching us who maybe their marriage has just broken down, although our primary audience is pastors who are thinking about how can I care better for the person going through divorce. Now, we've thrown you in the situation many, many, many times where somebody's emailed divorcecare@villagechurch.sydney and I said, can you have a coffee with this person? Can you, Mike, have a coffee with this person? How do you do that first conversation with the person where the marriage has just broken down? Yeah. What are some of the issues that come up? What's going on for people?
Oh, look, I think shock. People are often really deeply hurt and confused, and I try to listen as much as I can. I try to sort of really understand their journey. I also try to hear the degree to which they can speak about their own role. Because, you know, in all of life's problems, it's very easy to blame somebody else. It's a lot harder to actually recognise that you might have made mistakes as well and to actually to acknowledge those. So I try really hard to listen and, you know, every story is different in the same way that every marriage is different. So every divorce is different. And I try sort of not to generalise or jump to conclusions, but just really to listen and to hear.
Michael?
So besides what Melinda said, when we talk to people, everyone has got their own situation. Everybody's situation is, to a certain extent, unique. But people are often talking to us to find out about what is this divorce care and is it applicable to them. And one of the things I say is I can be very confident, I'll say to them, based on the experiences of all the people who have come through the group before you, I can be very confident that through participating in the course, you will have more a sense of hope. And by the end of the course, you will be somewhere further down the track towards recovery and feeling like a, you know, a whole person, because often people feel that they're not whole. They're feeling
diminished.
Judged by others. They're feeling diminished. And so I can say to them quite confidently, whatever your situation is, I'm fairly confident that you will come through and it'll be a very positive thing for you, this group. And I don't think, Melinda, have we ever heard of somebody who's come to us at the end and said, I actually think that was a waste of my time?
Not yet.
No, not yet, at least not to our face.
So there'll be some people here listening, watching, who don't know anything about the divorce care course. It's an American course, but what kind of things, well, how does it look if I'm thinking of going along, if my marriage has broken down? What's it going to be like on those that first night?
So it's there are 13 sessions. There's a video that we play to the group. Mm-hmm. So people arrive, we have tea and coffee, we relax, we
imagine
sort of
people
spend a little time.
They
are.
Yeah.
Certainly when they first walk in, they're really anxious and they're looking around and thinking, who are these guys? And, you know, I don't really know if I want to open up and talk about some, you know, some really personal experiences that they may not have actually spoken about to anybody. And so it can be quite challenging. So I do feel a lot of sympathy for them. But we have tea and coffee and then we sit down and we do this in our lounge room, I think, because it's also really important that people feel safe and that it feels private. And we watch a video. There are a variety of topics. And after the video, we just have, with the benefit of a booklet, we have a conversation that we tend to facilitate, but actually it's often not necessary for us to say a great deal. People do tend to, after a few sessions, tend to open up and to be very candid and very brave about what's happened to them.
But we actually say to them, Dominic, we say, look, when you come along to this group, you are not expected to divulge anything if you don't want about your situation.
Listen.
We just say, if you just want to sit down and listen and just soak it in, you're more than welcome to. Some people do that for a few times, and then more often than not, we find that as they develop trust in Melinda and I as the leaders of the group, but also develop some trust in the others, they tend to start opening up. And in fact, it's quite amazing that some of the personal details that people open up with, we don't offer them counselling per se. It's a support group. And we say to the other group, we would have a covenant with the group members to say to them, look, what is discussed here, please can you just respect that? But people do very much open up, but we never force them to do so. We say, if you just want to sit through the whole thing and just being in the group, you're more than welcome.
But in the end, often it's the case that the conversations are very raw and very real. Would just give us a sense of the topics that the videos raise over the the weeks. Yeah.
So the video will have a different topic each night. So some of the topics would include anger. There might be another one on depression. There might be another one on kids, what happens in the kids in the situation. There might be another one on new relationships. There'll be another night on forgiveness, another night on reconciliation.
Single sexuality.
And there'll also be, I think one of the ones that I like is there's one night on what does the owner's manual say. And that's really, there will be Bible and gospel references peppered throughout the evenings. People won't feel hit over the head with it, particularly if they're a non-Christian. We try to be respectful of that. But they will get a Christian perspective, but particularly that one, which is what does the owner's manual say, it very much lays out what does the Bible have to say about separation and divorce? And it also very clearly lays out the gospel. So it's very easy then for Melinda and I to follow that up in the conversations.
Now, the courses that you've led for us, percentage of people from the general community, percentage of Christian people who've kind of come along because they've heard about it, it's been roughly 50-50, is that right?
I would say probably there are more people that have come through churches and through sort of church networks. Mm-hmm. But it's certainly an amazing way of sort of reaching out to our local community.
I mean, just last
and we
Sunday,
have our banner out the front.
There's a banner out the front.
And we do get people who say, "I saw the banner when I was driving by."
I was out the front before church on Sunday morning, and one of the nurses at one of the local retirement villages, she walks past every Sunday morning and says hi, just as I stand out before church. Mm-hmm. And she said to me, "Now, can I just check this email for the divorce care?" Mm-hmm. And she'd seen the email on the poster, but thinking about it for a friend. And so the church has won respect in her eyes, and now she's got a friend who's going through trauma. Mm-hmm. She's wanting to refer them to this course.
Mm-hmm. Every group's a bit different. Some groups might be a little bit more non-Christians in the group than Christians. Mm-hmm. Some other groups can be the other. Mm-hmm. But particularly, people feel comfortable. It's an easy ask. So people in Christian circles can ask, put it to their work colleague or a friend who is not a churchgoer or is not a Christian. It's an easy ask to get them to come along because it's talking to somebody's situation.
And even for the Christian person, it's enormously therapeutic because the whole marriage breakdown does carry a stigma and a complexity in many churches. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Well, I think that's definitely true. I think that for a lot of people, they feel when their marriages do break down, particularly if there are not many other divorcees in their church communities, they feel incredibly isolated. And we get people who've left church because of that. Sometimes because their ex has stayed, so it doesn't feel sort of appropriate that they stay. But yes, I think I don't know if it's in their heads if it's real.
I think one man told me that he was at church and he found that he'd be sitting next to somebody and they'd say, "Oh, hello, I'm such and such." They'd begin that sort of after church conversation. Mm. He would disclose that he was recently separated and kind of in love, the conversation would start. "Oh, okay, what happened? Do you know?" And suddenly, he's only just met you, but I'm being called on to disclose, and the person is making an assessment. Are you the lever? Are you the left? Are you the bad guy? Are you the good guy? Were you the abuser? Were you the abused? Do you know? And that's, you can do that conversation once, but if that's going to happen twice a morning tea, every morning tea, do you know, that's a pretty grueling experience to go to Sunday morning.
And absolutely.
So he said to me he found it so helpful to come to divorce care that he could come to church and sit next to somebody from divorce care who would kind of keep him safe from those conversations because he'd have the conversation once in the divorce care group.
Yeah, look, I think, and it's really sad, you know, to think about that because for most people, I mean, there are, of course, a percentage of people who are relieved when a marriage ends. And we've had them. We've certainly had people say that. But for many people, you know, they do not want to open up and to talk to strangers and to sit in our lounge room with a group of people who are all very different but all have this one experience in common is really affirming. And once people overcome that initial fear, the amazing thing that we've seen over the years has been this fellowship that develops within the group and friendships are formed that actually often endure beyond the group.
And some people say, don't they, Melinda, they say, this is the place that I can go to once a week where I can take the mask off and just be myself.
Yep.
And it's good for us in our churches to make, you know, we can make the assumption that people do feel diminished. And whether they put that onto themselves or whether it's because of something that somebody said to them, they feel diminished. Mm. And so it's good to be able to create an environment where they can feel full and whole.
Well, yes. Yeah. God loves you as you are. You're a whole person.
You said to me before, I'm just trying to work out what are some of the... You said every divorce is different, just as every marriage is different, but there are some threads of commonality. One of the ones you were telling me about is many of the people, in one way or another, they're still in love with their ex-spouse.
Yes, I think...
Some.
Yeah, some. I think sometimes, there's unfaithfulness. There's frequently use of pornography. Widespread. And I think that...
Men
that,
and women?
It's mainly men we hear.
Yeah. There's communication issues.
Domestic violence. It could be physical or emotional or verbal. And that's not just domestic violence perpetrated on women, but... it's not uncommon for men to be disclosing that to us,
that they
feel like they're a victim.
We should say our experience at Village Church has been that we had to fill in a survey for our denomination on incidents of domestic violence, and our statistics were way higher than the average church, not in terms of current cases that we were dealing and intervening into complex relationships, but because of running divorce care, the number of people who were coming to us and in the divorce care context disclosing historic domestic violence cases. And so we've been able to be a hospital, a significant hospital, but it's been a very complex journey for you to help people through some of those things.
And I think, you know, we're not counsellors, and through this course we do not pretend to be. We refer people. So, you know, we might... And it is a ministry that involves a high level of pastoral care. We are often meeting people before the course starts, and I will quite often meet people during the course because the sessions bring up issues for people, and they may want to talk to you about that. But we do always refer people, particularly over an issue like domestic violence. We want to be ensuring that somebody got support so that they can sort of move forward and heal in this way.
Other common threads?
So another common thread is people will come through, and more often than not, people feel that they are the innocent party and the other person who they've separated from is the guilty party. And, you know, we see situations sometimes where, I mean, we're only hearing one side of the story, but if we take the story at face value, we hear stories where sometimes the other party is clearly the party that's the offending party. However, by the time somebody's finished the 13 sessions with us, more often than not, they would have been thinking... Whereas at the start, they're thinking the other person, it's all their
100%
issue.
100% their fault.
Yeah. They'd be thinking, what we actually say to them, we actually say, look, you might feel like you are the offended party, and maybe you are, but what are you going to learn out of this situation? What... did you have any contribution to it? And through the period of the 13 sessions, people often at the end say, well, look, yes, I was offended against, but there were some things that I could have done differently. And certainly if I ever consider a relationship in the future, there are some things that I could learn. Whereas at the beginning of the course, they didn't think that, and they would be at risk of just taking the same behaviours into their next relationship and making the same mistakes if they made mistakes. Whereas the course helps them to self-reflect a little bit more about that. And so that's a common thread.
While you hang on to that sense of injustice and you don't reflect, you don't learn and you don't grow. And I think, you know, you can also fall into the trap of maintaining a sort of bitter mindset that means that you hold to yourself the right to judge and you deny that from the best judge that we have, and that's God. So I think the other thing that the course does is it helps people to hand back to God those offences and to trust God with those. And I think that can be an enormously liberating experience. It allows people to grow and to let go of the past and to move forward a different person and a better person.
Because people can be so bitter... particularly if the ex-partner's done something outrageous to them. People can be so bitter and they feel empowered by focusing all their bitterness and thoughts onto the other party, and yet that's actually, ironically, it's keeping themselves enslaved. And so we talk about that imagery of you're keeping yourself in jail if you're just putting all your energy towards focusing the bitterness on the other and focusing on your rightness. You think that you're the jailer, but you're the actual one in jail. And we get people to say, hand that over to God and don't go down the path of bitterness. Go down the path of, you know, hand it over to God. God's the just judge. that's in a sense forgiveness. It might not be reconciliation, but it's a sense of forgiveness. And then people then are much more able to deal with themselves and actually move forward and learn new things that in future relationships they can perhaps do, avoid maybe some of the mistakes that they had in the past.
Let me try out a thought that I can't remember whether I've heard you say it or others who've been through the course. When somebody's marriage is broken down, often the default is, quick, I've got to find myself a new relationship. And yet, I'm in no way ready for a new relationship. And I mean, whether or not somebody is biblically free to remarry is a whole different question. Yep. But just putting that question aside for a minute, how do you help people slow down on those issues and rebuild life, which they really need to do, without being in a relationship as they look back and fix some of the things about themselves in the past?
The course is very helpful. Some of the, you get on the DVDs, you get, there's great exposure to some very wise counsellors and pastors. And one of the common threads of it is don't try to medicate or fix some of the grief that you've got by jumping straight into a relationship. Actually, the relationship that you should be focusing on is your relationship with God and His Son, empowered by His Spirit. You should be, that's what we encourage and what the content of the course encourages people to focus upon. And just going off, you're very vulnerable, and just going off and trying to fill the void by going into a relationship with somebody else. Sometimes it's just a sexual relationship that people jump into, even though they might be a Christian and it goes against their values. They're just hurting so much. They're looking
to fill
the void. And we very much, sometimes we've had to be quite
blunt,
very blunt with people, but we've never had anybody say, geez, you know, I really regret you doing that. People have been very thankful that we've actually been quite, we said, no, that is not the right thing for you to be doing. Pull back. And people have been very appreciative of that in hindsight. And we just say, focus on your relationship with God. And then we never suggest that you, to be full in the future, you have to go into another married type of relationship. We don't have to. That's not the way God looks at us. But we say, but if you do, a time will come. And it's often the time that you feel like you're right in yourself and I'm okay. And you don't need that relationship. That we see that that's the time that actually God puts people in front of them. But the mistake is to jump in too quickly. And the common thread is that, because a number of us, we're sexual beings, the common thread is we want to go in and develop relationships before we're ready. That's a very common thread. So we talk about that and people feel encouraged and supported once we talk about that and get that out into the agenda.
We do try and speak openly too about those matters. They're not, we're very clear. And I think the only the other thing I'd add to that is that people have often got children in the midst of these sorts of difficult situations. So children have had their family lives pulled apart. And children deserve an opportunity to adjust to this new way that their family is functioning, you know, with often shared custody and sort of moving about. And, you know, that's really hard. No kid asks for that. So, you know, I personally think that it's just fair on children to allow them time to adjust to their new circumstances without introducing somebody new.
One of the big issues that I've perceived for people is I'm going through this trauma. And am I the only one who's ever felt like this? And how the group experience where we're open as a group and I'm hearing, as maybe I was a leaver, I hear the experience of someone who was left, do you know? Or I'm a man and I hear the experience of someone who's a woman, do you know? I get to kind of vicariously put myself in the other person's shoes.
They do?
We do. Very important.
Tell us how that plays out.
We absolutely, that's actually really a powerful factor in the way that the course operates and the fellowship and the friendships develop, because I think the other part that you sort of, you don't necessarily take into account is, particularly if you have children, you have to be, in a way, a good ex. So you have to be able to have a sort of a functional relationship with the person
that you were married to.
Correct.
If
possible, for the benefit of your children.
It's not always
possible. They will often share stories and somebody will sort of talk about, you know, my ex, you know, makes my life difficult by sort of, you know, not turning up when we agree that he should turn or she should turn up.
And then,
then somebody else sits there thinking,
I've done that.
I really should turn up on time.
Yeah.
So I think, yes, I absolutely. And we've even had somebody say, gee, I wish you were my ex. Because, you know, people are often, as Christians, they're often trying really hard under very difficult circumstances to be godly in the wake of the breakup of a marriage. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard.
Mm-hmm. But isn't it interesting, Melinda, like we've had people, like I remember we had a mature man who was a very mature Christian, and he had felt that he'd been emotionally abused by his ex, and they were now separated and divorced. And he felt... So, I don't know if traumatized is the right word, but he felt so affected that he couldn't trust women.
Mm.
He couldn't trust women. He felt that all women were against him because his ex was against him.
Mm.
Now, if he probably thought about that logically, he wouldn't have. But that's how he felt. Being in the group, he opened up. He could actually see, no, these women seem to be trustworthy. And that was one of his healings.
Mm. Mm.
I think so, because for a lot of people it's within churches and even within workplaces and friendships it can be very difficult to talk about what's happened. You know, people will often keep things a secret out of shame, you know, sometimes for years, and, you know, that's really, I find that really sad. You know, I want to think of people being part of sort of social networks that are trustworthy and are loving, and I think that's where that sort of divorce care dynamic, you know, is, as much as we can manage it, is a loving and trustworthy network to really sort of care and support people through a really difficult phase.
Mm. Now, what about the steps from divorce care to Sunday church? Because we at Village Church have seen quite a few people over time. It's certainly not been everyone who's done the course, but quite a few people have come to the course for healing. But as they've heard of the God who loves them and heard of a framework of the way God relates to them, that they've actually then made steps into personal relationship with Jesus. Tell us about how that's worked out in different people's situations.
Well, for people in our society, and I think this is fairly common amongst churches, certainly around Sydney, it can be very hard to get people into churches. People often regard churches as irrelevant. Yet we can get people into divorce care much more easily. It's a much easier ask, and it's a non-confrontational ask. And nobody's going to be asked to hand over money or sign or make any sort of a commitment to a church. What we find, if they are from a non-churched or don't come from a Christian worldview, we find, not always, but often, they fall in love with community. They fall in love with community. They get converted to community. And then it's a smaller leap for them to be asked to come along to another community. It could be one of our Introducing God courses, or we could ask them to one of our church services. So they fall in love with community in the divorce care, and then it's an easier step to bring them along. Not all of them do that. Some of them just do the divorce care, then go back to wherever they came from. They might be going back to another church, or maybe not. But yes, as you say, Dominic, a lot of people have come into our church. They would never have come in directly into the church, but they've come in through the group. They get to see what church people are really like. They get to see what community actually feels like, because we're in a society now where community has diminished quite often for a lot of people. They see really good community happening. Much smaller step and much easier ask then to get them to come along. And as you know, a number of people in our church have come through the divorce care ministry.
I think we also, sorry Dominic, I was just going to say, we also, Mike and I, in our home on a Sunday afternoon, also for quite some time had a Bible study. So we would ask people in our group, would you like to join us?
For Bible
and
study?
Correct. And then after, because we sort of live close to the church, the Bible study would finish conveniently at 5:45.
Almost as if you planned it.
Exactly. And then we would walk in a group down to the church, and so they would be coming in with us so that they would be sitting with us and they would feel comfortable. So, you know, we've sort of done things like that to try to sort of encourage people to come back.
And one of the things, I'll just, again, test my thesis. One of the things I notice about people whose marriage is broken down One week they've got kids, next week they don't. So they're really busy one week, but they've actually got a whole lot of discretionary time. The alternate, and I'm lonely the alternate week. And so I actually am free to do something like come to church or come to Bible study group in a way that when I was just busy doing kids' sport and stuff like that, I might not have been.
Well, that's very true. That's for a lot of people, that's their, that's sort of become their new life that they sort of never anticipated, that they're by themselves often.
Thanks very much for coming to talk to us today.
Great pleasure.
Thanks, Dominic.
Thank you.
My guests on The Pastor's Heart have been Melinda Hunt and Michael Sheedy, and it's been great that you've been able to join us this afternoon, and we'll look forward to your company again next week on The Pastor's Heart. Hey, if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we would love it if you could hop over to the Apple Podcasts app and give us a rating and review. That helps us in the rankings and lets other people discover The Pastor's Heart. And again, if you are able to help us out by being a financial partner, go to our Patreon link, patreon.com/thepastorsheart.